Yeah, that was Street Art by Dana McKeon. Quite a nice little tune, actually. Well, it used to be something that was scorned, complained about, and then likely scrubbed out by authorities. Today, more often than not, it's become a welcome part of the landscape and helps to define cities around the world, even featuring in many travel write-ups. It's street art, the best of which has now been catalogued by Lonely Planet in a new book compiled by Ed Bartlett, who's based in London. Adelaide Ng spoke with him recently.
Well, welcome to Travel Writers Radio, Ed.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm in Melbourne, you're in London, some of the world's most active street art centres, would you say?
I would say definitely. I mean, both are pretty influential in the scene and have been for quite a long time.
Does street art in London look different from Melbourne?
Well, I mean, Melbourne was always known a lot for stencil work, and obviously much of that scene really came out of originally Black Lerat, but also very much Banksy, who was very active in London for a long period in the early 2000s. So I think there was probably a lot of similarity. I think maybe it's changed a lot now. I think if you were to visit the two cities back to back, I think you'd see quite a few differences. You do also have a lot of artists that travel between the two cities a lot. So, yeah, you will still see some of the same faces, but they have a unique scene.
I guess if you were to visit the different street art centres around the world, do you get that it's more about the genre, more so than the environment or geographical location that inspires the type of art?
No, I would say that's what it is, actually. I think it's quite interesting to look at how you do have these travelling names, so you will see the same faces in different cities, but you also really do see a kind of unique grassroots scene in each place, which is kind of based on local politics or local music and culture, or whether it's the geography, the weather, the environment, the architecture, somewhere like Athens versus Sao Paulo versus London versus Hong Kong. There's a lot of difference in terms of how the artists use, I guess, the canvas. You know, the buildings are essentially a canvas. So that plays a lot into the art that you see on the streets.
So if you were to describe the different types of art in different locations, what would you say? What would be the top picks?
Well, I mean, I think they're all great. I mean, making this book was quite difficult because trying to narrow it down to end up with a book that wasn't going to be a huge tome on a coffee table was quite tricky. Obviously, gives us room for future versions. But I think trying to kind of nail that, you have to include the key centres, right? So it's got to be New York, it's got to be Paris, London, Berlin. But I think also trying to include some of these cities that maybe people wouldn't think of, somewhere like Christchurch, which obviously had the terrible earthquake, and street art played a huge role in regenerating that city originally. But then you go somewhere like Johannesburg in Africa, which has a very different flavour. I think they're all equally interesting and vital, and I think the point of this book really was to give people a starting point and give them some guidance. But I think the beauty of street art is it's about your journey. It's about how it can come into your day completely unexpectedly.
Absolutely. But what about the backstory? I mean, street art is a fairly common part of the landscape now, but if you can take us through its past, we know, I mean, graffiti must be as old as the spray can, but how did it evolve to become bona fide art as it's recognised in many parts of the world today?
I mean, it began, I mean, if you go back to New York in the 80s, you know, you've got artists like Basquiat and Keith Haring, Kenny Scarfe, who's, you know, still practicing today, people like Richard Hambleton, who's having a bit of a resurgence at the moment, Lee Quinones, you know, all those guys. A lot of that came from, the kind of original graffiti scene in New York City. And those guys were having gallery shows, you know, back in the early 80s. And it's been very interesting to see over the kind of early 2000s, there's been a real resurgence in that idea of street art becoming something that could appear in a gallery space. And then you had, you know, Banksy doing things like the Bailey Legal Show in LA. You had a lot of the American artists coming over to Europe doing shows, people like Fail. But then you had museums getting involved. So, you know, with art, it's always a little bit about the validation, and you need these museums and curators to kind of rubber stamp it. Is that right? I don't really know if it's the way it should be. That's just how the system works. But we're at a point now where some of the early artists have crossed over and become major contemporary artists. They have gallery representation. They do major shows all around the world. And some of them are kind of switching their focus really now to become more like gallery artists than they are street artists, which is quite interesting, I think.
In your view, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's just a thing. It's a bit like when you discover a new band, right? And you go to their early gigs and it's amazing and exciting, and then they start playing bigger venues. Then you start struggling to get tickets to see them, and then their music output changes, and then you fall out of love, and maybe you rediscover them later. I think it's the same with art. I think there are a lot of people who would love to own a piece by Banksy, or they'd love to own a piece by Ozgemios, or one of these big name guys whose work now sells for tens and hundreds of thousands of pounds. But there are also people that got in there at the very early days and, you know, will treasure their art forever. And I think it's very similar analogy with music.
You speak of Banksy, the most famous street artist, of course, and I guess he's considered the demigod of street art, but do you feel that there are others who are on par with him, but they haven't been noticed as much?
Yeah, I think, you know, everyone talks about the Banksy effect. We had the UK premiere of Saving Banksy this weekend, which is the new film, to coincide with our book launch this weekend. It was very interesting to kind of talk to people who maybe didn't know quite so much about Banksy and sort of, or street art generally, but knew everything about Banksy. And he kind of has transcended that genre really and become his own thing. You know, he's moving more towards the kind of status of someone like Andy Warhol now. He has made his mark on art history and he will be remembered forever, whereas a lot of people won't. A lot of big-name contemporary artists won't be remembered in the future. And so I think there are others who come through who are very different to him, but who will be remembered for different reasons. Look at someone like JR, who does the kind of large photographic paste-ups, the work he does around the world with different communities and raising awareness of lots of really interesting issues. I think there are a lot of names who, over time, will have that status.
Now, interestingly, I didn't see any of Banksy's works featured in your book. Did I miss the page, or is that a conscious decision?
I think it's mentioned a couple of times. It's quite tricky to get rights to kind of show some of this work. So it's a bit more of a political thing, I think. We'd have loved to include it. I think there's a lot of people that go out there and will include work in these books and kind of create Banksy books and memorabilia and whatever. I wanted to do this book with the explicit permission of everybody that's featured, and unfortunately we couldn't secure that for Banksy for this book. I think he's been pretty busy with the Waldorf Hotel thing in Palestine. So it's a shame. It would have been nice to have had one or two pieces, but I think there's been so many people trying to market and sell things off the back of his name. And everybody that's featured in this book are people that have been, you know, explicitly involved and happy to be involved. So yeah, that's the main reason.
You interviewed several street artists, I believe, for the book. What would you say is their biggest motivator, and also what frustrates them the most about street art?
I think the motivator is just the passion for the street. I mean, it's such a unique canvas. You know, the galleries are designed to be the white cube. I mean, it's meant to be a blank space where you can go and experience art. Outside is obviously the complete opposite of that. You may be painting one day in a kind of very rundown neighborhood in America or anywhere. Next day you may be painting in the souks in Marrakesh, or you may be painting, you know, in the high-rises of Kiev. It's such a different environment, and I think having to constantly adapt to those challenges, it keeps you on your toes. And I think also the subject matter is constantly changing. I think we're going to see a big upsurge now in probably a lot more politicized street art with the current kind of global political climate that's happening right now. So I think a lot of these guys still do things illegally as well, and I think that's always the kind of, most of these people started off that way, and I think it's become now a much more legalized art form. But I think there will always be that certain buzz of putting something illicit up on the street. And I think for me personally, that's the most exciting street art I see, is when I come across something entirely unexpectedly. I think the biggest challenges are, I mean, it can be very challenging purely in terms of putting these pieces up. I mean, some of these buildings are 20, 30, 40 stories high.
I mean, do they map this out on a A4 size sheet of paper and get all the colours right before they come up, and maybe use a painter's ladder or something or other to get up there? And I'd have to have no idea how they get the scale right.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, you look at someone like Ben Ein, who does the kind of letter forms, versus someone like Guido van Helton, who does these huge, you know, painterly portraits. I think it varies artist to artist. We had a live painting event this weekend to coincide with the book launch as well at the Arnolfini. And it's interesting just seeing the guys kind of just picking up cans purely just on gut feel. There wasn't a huge amount of planning. I mean, people would generally do an outline and have some idea of colour palette. But a lot of the time it happens very organically. And you have someone like Vils, who we interviewed in the book, who does the work where he kind of takes the surface of the wall away. So it's not painted, it's kind of chiseled out. And he's been experimenting with using kind of small explosives and things to kind of blow sections of the wall away. You can't fix that. You know, if something goes wrong, you can't glue the concrete back in. It's the beauty of the art form is the immediacy, and, you know, you can see it. You can see the mistakes.
Amazing. Is there such a thing as street art tourism these days?
There absolutely is, yeah. I mean, the festivals have been a big part of that. I think, you know, we purposefully put 15 of the kind of global festivals into the book because those are opportunities where people can plan ahead and kind of go and take part like you would a music festival, and you can actually watch the artists at work, you can meet them. It's so rare in the art world to be able to actually watch these works to be created. Some of these festivals are having tens of thousands of people coming now. So the book really is part of that. I think it works well as a reference book. It works well as a kind of book to be able to plan your journey and to go and see these places. I think what's the most interesting thing, which I hadn't considered until it's been finished, is that actually what it represents is like a global kind of slice through what is a very transient media. A lot of these pieces won't exist in a week or a month or a year. And so, yeah, to have something that kind of has a global slice of how it exists today, I think will be interesting in 5 years, 10 years, 50 years. And I think people traveling and documenting this stuff themselves through mobile phones and Instagram and hashtagging is what really makes it exciting today.
And if you had one piece of street art that you can but shouldn't take home, what would that be?
Wow, that's a tricky one. I've walked past many pieces in the past, and yeah, it's I recently started foraging mushrooms, and I was always told never to take all of them and to leave some there. It's important, and I think it's similar with that. One piece that I would take home with me, there was a piece when I was in London many moons ago, which was also by Banksy, and it was the guys with the riot shields, but with the kind of yellow smiley face, you know, the kind of famous acid house smiley face. I think about that piece a lot, how it looked on the street, and I'd quite like that on my wall.
Fantastic. Ed Bartlett, thank you so much for giving us your time for The Lonely Planet's new book called Street Art.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Travel Writers Show on J-Air 87.8 FM. That was street art author Ed Bartlett talking to Adelaide Ng from London.